Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathleen O., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, June 3rd, 2019, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are on page 30, the second paragraph. We learned that we had to, and we're reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Sandy W. reading the 12 Steps, Teresa S. reading the 12 Traditions, and the readers of our text are Leslie M., Carrie S., and the share ID for Sunday, June 2nd, the special edition is 12,983. That's 12983. And for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time is 12,984. That's 12984. Our newcomer greeter today is Ginger C, and Robin P will be making our announcements. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through the abstinence and practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So, Sandy W., would you please read the 12 steps this morning?
Thanks, Kathleen. I'd be honored to. This is Sandy W., gratefully recovered in Connecticut. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thanks so much for letting me do service.
And thank you, Sandy W. Teresa S., would you read the 12 traditions, please?
Good morning, Teresa S. from Bismarck, North Dakota. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Teresa, we lost you.
Can you hear me?
Still there?
Yeah.
Can
you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Yes.
Okay. These 12 traditions are to the groups what the 12 steps are to the individual. They are suggested principles to ensure the survival and growth of the many groups that compose over. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Number two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Number three, The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, unless problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me be a service.
And thank you, Teresa S. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 30, the second paragraph that begins with, "We learned that we had to." We'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. And Leslie W., good morning. If you could get us started, please.
Good morning, Kathleen O. Thank you for your service. This is Leslie M., a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. As I said, my name is Leslie M. And this paragraph is just amazing. And it's really for me, it was the basis. I had come into been listening to A Vision for You and got A Vision for You sponsor, and she sent me an initial assignment to do. And one of the assignments was to listen to Ruth M. speak on the doctor's opinion. And that's exactly what she said. She said, I had to fully concede in my heart that I was a compulsive overeater. And when I first listened to that, I wasn't ready to say that. There were still things that I thought that I should be doing. And as long as I thought that I should be doing something, there was no way that I was going to fully concede that was the case. I didn't want to eat like other people. I wanted to eat just the way I ate, and I wanted to look like other people and behave like other people, but I wanted to be able to eat everything I wanted to eat and have none of the consequences. So when it says this is a first step in recovery, it even comes, this part of it, the fully conceding to myself that I was a compulsive overeater and that I could do nothing about it, was before even step one, before I knew I was powerless over anything. I had to know this in my heart, because I kept thinking that there was something else that I had to do. And the part of it is that my other thinking had to be smashed. So when I finally did concede that I was a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety and needed to work this program, I had to dive in 1,000%. So I had to know that I was powerless over my food, but that I was also powerless over my thinking. And that was what was going to take me down every time if I didn't remember that. So now when I say I think, I kind of chuckle to myself and say, maybe you should check that out with someone else who thinks a little better than you. And that's all I have. With that, I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Leslie M. Okay, who else would like to share on this paragraph?
Irene B. from Louisiana.
Irene B.
Shlomi Hana B.
Shlomi Hani B.
Melanie C.
Okay, I got Melanie K. Who came in with Melanie C?
Julie I.
Julie I.
Mary
and then I got Stacy. Okay, I got Stacy
okay,
K.
I got Stacy K.
And Miriam
Ginger
C.
Ginger C.
Okay, hold on. Okay,
okay, hold on. Okay, we're going to stop right there.
I'm getting a really bad echo. So hopefully you're not getting the echo. So I have Irene B. Slumihami. I'm sorry if I'm messing up your name there. B. Melanie C. Julie I. Stacy K. Miriam Rifka. And Ginger C. I think it is. Okay, Irene B. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for your service. I'm Irene B. from Louisiana. I recover in bulimic. Can I be heard?
Hold on just a minute, Irene.
Okay, go ahead, Irene.
Okay, good. Thank you. Okay. So I love this little paragraph because I'm a recovering bulimic, but I have had an eating disorder all of my life, and for sure a compulsive overeater since age 6. And by the grace of God, I was delivered from bulimia that had me in its grips for many, many, many years, and 4 inpatient treatment centers, 4 outpatient treatment centers, 30-plus therapists. And there was no hope for me. And by the grace of God, 26 months ago, tomorrow, I was delivered from bulimia. And by the grace of God, the food, the idea of going back to the food scares me half to death. Like the hot flame, the hot stove, I cannot go there. But I don't call myself a recovered bulimic because I've discovered through another program that I have deep self-hatred and self-loathing. And my thought life, my anxiety based on my thought life is insane. I am fearful. I live in fear. I used to think that I had no fear, but my fear is rejection. My fear is that I'm not good enough. I have overcome being worthless, and through the word of God, who I call my higher power, I've learned that that I'm not worthless. So right now, I'm just not good enough. But that is infinitely better than being worthless. And I've shared this in the earlier meeting before, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, but that's my reality.
Muted. You're a big fat flag, and it's hot.
Can I resume?
Yes, you may. Sorry, Irene.
Okay, that's okay. So, I'm very gratefully delivered from the food, but what I love about this paragraph is it says that I am not like anybody else. And I used to think that that there's something wrong with me because in my recovery, I can have foods in very small quantities, and I'm okay with it. And I felt like I'm wrong. Everybody else is right because everybody else in these rooms cannot have those substances, but I can. And so, therefore, I'm wrong, and I'm not recovered, but I'm not binging and purging, and I'm not binging. I do eat emotionally, but not compulsively. And when I feel full, I'm full. But I just had to let go. This is freedom to me, to know that I'm not like everybody else. Okay, thank you so much. Thank you for listening. I pass.
And thank you. Thank you, Irene. Okay, Slomahani B, followed by Melanie C.
Hi, thank you so much for your service and everybody for being on the line. This is Shlomit Hana B. And this is a small and very powerful paragraph. It really packs a punch. And this is where I am. That to think that I can be like other people is a delusion, and it needs to be smashed. And you know what? It has been smashed again and again and again and again over the last, I guess, 2 months that I was in relapse. Thank you, God, through God's kindness. I am abstinent 3 days, and I will be starting the steps with a new sponsor, and I'm incredibly grateful. And I'm so grateful to this meeting for getting me there and for being the support. And, you know, every time I would pick up the food and say, have that feeling, that craving of, well, you know, I just want one chip, you know, just one, you know, one of this or one of that. I'll start tomorrow and I'll be okay. Or I just want one, I can stop. You know, initially when my whole relapse started, I really thought that I could not necessarily eat normally, but that I could work sort of an intuitive program and deal with my deep-seated inner child issues and work my program that way. And I found out very quickly that I could not, that for my compulsive overeating, I can't work it through another lens, that I need to work it through OA. And for me now to work it through, you know, through the big book and using the program the way that it's described so beautifully in this meeting, that that's what's working for me. And it's just really amazing that I had 11 and a half years of abstinence, not perfect abstinence, but abstinence for the better part of 11 and a half years, and how very, very, very quickly, in a blink of an eye, that my mentality could change from, you know, knowing that I really had to protect my program and can't pick up to picking up. And, you know, and the picking up started with that delusion that maybe I could be like other people, and or not even like other people, but that I could be different from who I am. And I'm not. I'm not. I'm an addict. I'm a food addict. Thank you so much. Pass.
And thank you, Slomihani. Okay, Melanie C., you are up next, followed by Julie I.
Hi, good morning, Kathleen. Oh, good morning, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm calling in from Wilsonville, Oregon. My sponsor talked a lot about this particular paragraph when I first met her. She talked about the idea that it needed to travel from my head to my heart, and I didn't quite understand what that meant, because my heart was my head. And that has changed over time. I have a better, clearly a better understanding of that right now. My heart is where my actions are going to be. My head is where all the thinking goes around and around and around and around and around. It's that vicious cycle of things. And what enters in is mostly things that start chipping away at what my heart wants. It covers up, you know, what my heart wants. And this is about, certainly about God. But as, pardon me, as she was continuing to try to teach this concept to me, and to show me that it wasn't anything that I was necessarily going to be aware of. It's where, even in my blind moments, is where I was going to find my feet at. What was I going to be doing when these kinds of things came up? And as I studied, and she helped me study about Bill's actions around this, he had been in hospital a couple of times before and was completely rid of any alcohol in this system. The physical aspect, the physical piece of that disease was out, but he didn't have this idea in his heart. He didn't have a solution for whatever it was in his heart. And so his steps then, when the chatter came and the cycle started in his mind again, he had to drink again. He had no other choice. But on the third time, he had such an experience, such a light that was turned on in this situation, that with the support of the steps, he didn't have to pick up again. And he teaches, and this whole idea came to me, that I was taught that it was the first drink, it was the absolute first drink that caused the drunk. It was my first bite, and I could do anything else but pick up that first bite, and that part was my responsibility. With the support of this fellowship, things were put in place so that I didn't have to take that first bite while the steps were continuing to work with me and kept me very, 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 very busy over the whole thing. I needed a plan in place, so when that monkey chatter happened, there was no food being put in my mouth that I was allergic to. I had a different relationship with food than a normal person, and I needed to understand that with my actions, not with my mind, but with my actions, so that the rest would follow. What this idea about food means to me is that anything that goes in my mouth anymore, I cannot have a relationship with like that anymore. I can't say, ooh, ah, I can't say, oh, this is wonderful and lovely. I just can't have that kind of relationship with food anymore. But it all began with, and I'll end with this, it all began with that the action, every action that I take, I'm not real sure if I'm going to be able to end the way I mean to with this, that I have a choice over this matter. I think that was the most important thing, that I had a choice over this matter, and the choice was not to pick up that first bite. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Melanie C. And Julie I, you're up next, followed by Stacey K.
Hi, I'm Julie I in Dallas, Texas. I'm a compulsive overeater. This paragraph is really a powerful one. I think, as people have said before, I just got back from a week-long vacation with family, and it became very clear to me that I still haven't fully conceded to my innermost self that I'm a compulsive overeater. I think I have. I've been abstinent for the last 2.5 years, but it's still so interesting and surprising at times to see how this disease manifests itself and how it contaminates my thinking and gets me back into that cycle of believing that I can be normal, particularly when I'm around other people who have a normal relationship with food and can behave and interact with food in a way that I just cannot. I think what I'm so grateful about this program is that it is a program of action. And so even if my heart and my mind are still not fully aligned, that I still take the actions anyway. And so even when I was on vacation and in a place where cell reception was quite poor at times, I was still able to stay in contact with my sponsor and still able to reach out and, you know, share a plan of eating and take the actions that support my abstinence. So I was, thank God, able to stay abstinent, even though there were times where it was very difficult for me. And so just reading this paragraph again, it just makes me question, have I fully conceded, to that belief that I am, or to that understanding that I am a compulsive overeater? And I can see in this, you know, as I go through this program, you know, just that there's so many layers to that question, and that this disease wants me to continue to believe that I'm not. And, you know, thank God I don't have to necessarily believe that in every moment, but I do have to trust God and I do have to take action. And that's what keeps me abstinent. And, you know, little by little, I come to that understanding and, you know, with God's help, we'll be relieved of this, you know, we'll be recovered and relieved of the obsession with food. And for that, I'm grateful. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Julie I. Stacey K., you're up next, followed by Miriam Rivka.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Stacey Kay, and I'm from Colorado, and I am a real compulsive overeater. Oh, this word smashed. It's pretty powerful for me, you know. Some people, you know, you hear all the time, one day at a time, you know, maybe you can eat tomorrow or whatever. I had to stop telling myself that, you know, I had to say I can never, you know, I can never have that. And I can, you know, well, I guess I could choose after I'm recovered to eat that, but I'm choosing relapse if I do that, you know, absolutely, because I know my disease, you know, that, you know, I take that first bite and then I'm not going to be able to stop. You know, and I'm so grateful for this chapter because it reminds me why I have to stick around, and I have to stick around other compulsive overeaters in recovery and see this program working every day and be reminded, you know, of my first step. I have to continue to smash it because I tell you what, you know, I start feeling pretty good and I start thinking, you know, maybe I don't need it, you know, to work with as many people, or I don't need to, you know, go to as many meetings, or, you know, I can skip, you know, this part or that part of the program because I'm busy now, you know, and it's like, no, absolutely not. And life does, you know, things continue to change in my life and things continue to, you know, get better, you know, and I'm so grateful for that. But it's only because of this program. It's only because of these 12 steps. And so I do have to be reminded of this. My little defects and my disease crops up all over the place, you know. And if I didn't have these steps, you know, I would be back in the food for sure. And that's why, you know, even when I stop, I'm not going to stay stopped unless I'm doing this work. And I got to do all of it because I don't know if there's any piece of it that I can, you know, do without, you know, maybe for a day or two, I don't know. But yeah, I need to keep doing this deal and I to smash it. Like I keep wanting, like I want that practical approach to how to smash this idea, you know, that I can eat like other people. And, you know, my disease definitely got me there, you know, like, you know, that's the pain and the suffering in this disease. But as I'm taking the first step and as I'm looking at this today, yeah, I just got to be telling myself, no, Stace, that's not yours. You can never use, you know, X, Y, and Z food safely. You know, I can't put that stuff in my body. And I also can't go without working these
time,
steps
please.
Every day. Yes, thank you. And that's all I have. I'll pass.
Thank you, Stacey K. And Miriam Ripka, you're up next, followed by Ginger C.
Hi. Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you for your service. Starting my timer, this is Miriam Ripka H in New Jersey, recovered compulsive eater. I'm just very grateful to be here. This paragraph I definitely identify with. I learned that I have to concede to my innermost self that I was alcoholic, that I'm a compulsive eater. This is the first step in my recovery. The delusion that I'm like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. And, you know, it was a new concept to me to realize that I'm not like other people. I am only in my own brain. I'm not in anyone else's head or body, and I don't know what goes on in anyone else's head. And it didn't ever occur to me that other people aren't the same as me. You know, yes, like I didn't think other people were binging like I was, but I thought just maybe like they have more willpower or they, you know, don't have crazy things going on in their life like I do. Everything is worse for me. And, you know, I just had all these reasons and I didn't realize that there's literally something different about me, that I have this physical allergy and coupled with this mental obsession that when I'm eating certain foods, I simply can't stop. And I was never getting out of the cycle. I was always having, you know, some of my allergic foods on a regular basis. I didn't even know what it felt like to not be in there. I was reminded of this very strongly over the weekend. I was with a family member who, you know, eats in a way that I identify with. And they had told me that they'd come to stay for the weekend. And they said, you know, I brought three outfits because, you know, it's the beginning. It's the beginning of the summer and it's warmer now. And I'm getting out my summer clothing and I'm not sure what's going to fit. So I brought, you know, my nice outfit and then the just-in-case outfit and then the absolute worst-case scenario outfit. And they were saying it very matter-of-factly. And I was thinking, like, I know what that means. I get you. But at the same time, like, that realization of, like, this is not normal. This isn't how regular people live. And it really took me a while to come to see that I am different. A delusion, you know, it's when I have a belief that's completely false. And I just had this belief. I kept going back for more. I kept trying again and trying again in terms of getting my food in control. And finally, I had to realize, Mayor Mrifka, this has been going on for, you know, over a decade. Why do you think that there's just going to be one day that it's all going to get fixed? Like, I finally, it had to have been God just showed me that something big has to happen if anything is going to happen. And I was very grateful to have been introduced to this program that really works. If we follow these 12 steps, we won't have to, or I should say I, if I follow these 12 steps, I won't have to live like this anymore. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Miriam Rifka H. So just a reminder, we're on page 30, the second paragraph. We learned that we had to, and after Ginger C, I'll be taking more names. So go ahead, Ginger C.
Yeah, thank you so much for your service again. This is Ginger C., recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. I'm like jumping out of my skin. Oh my gosh, this is like one of my all-time favorite paragraphs. You know, and for two decades in OA, all I knew was this relapse cycle, this chronic relapse repeating over and over the insanity of that first bite. And it was like, you know what, just give it up, Ginge. You're going to die with the food in your mouth because you can't stop and you can't get recovery. And why bother? Because you get a little tired when you're just a chronic relapser. You know, and I used to judge the ones in AA, like, God, why can't you put the plug in the jug and just stop? I did. And it's like, boy, your compassion in your heart sure shifts when you see it in your own experience. And that's all you know. And it's really painful. And so what a gift anyone today that has a fork down and not eating. Thank you, God, again, doing for me what I cannot and will not do. But, you know, this paragraph, there's two parts in this book that I know were a big part to my relapse because I never got through the work. It wasn't about resting on laurels and not doing 10, 11, and 12 and repeating 1 through 12 on a yearly basis. Nope, I never got there. It was these beginning paragraphs, this entire abstinence that they talk about in the doctor's opinion. You know, I wanted to have my cake and eat it too. In OA, I was going to figure out a way to still have my best friend be a part of my life. So I never got entirely abstinent. And the second part, I never fully conceded. And there's only one step that you need to take 100%. And if you do not take it in this way, this fully conceding to your innermost self, head to heart, you will never get it. Step one is your foundation. It's what you're standing upon for those remaining 11 steps. And to concede, I have to admit that something is true or valid after first denying or resisting it. And absolutely, I want to deny it. But then guess what? Those beautiful bites, man, they only progress. They only get more painful. And they caught my attention in the way this food deserved. Because I always dismissed it. I always thought, well, you're not driving drunk. It's not like you're alcohol and drugs. It's not like you're on heroin, Ginge. And yes, the sugar became my heroin. I felt like I was drunk at 24 years of sobriety. It was scary. I thought the bottle of vodka was next to my nightstand, and all it was were lemon heads, these little sugary candies. I was so insane. I was a zombie. I was numb. I was bedbound. I couldn't even get out of bed most days at the end. And thank God for those beautiful bites, because that's where I finally conceded, this is real. This is my life, and what am I going to do about it? God help me. I'm dying, and it's because of sugar, not alcohol. And so I finally took it head to heart in the way it needed to be. It has to, that back door has got to be shut. And if it's not shut, you're not going anywhere. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Ginger C. And who else would like to share on the second paragraph on page 30?
Freedom.
Beatrice O.
Frida B.
Okay, I got Frida B. And who is the gentleman that came after Frida?
Bruce E.
Bruce E. And I got Wendy Beatrice M. O. Wendy M.
Kenny. Maureen S.
Maureen S.
Yeah, thank you.
Penny C.
Penny C. Okay, let's stop right there for now. So I have Frida B, Bruce E, Beatrice O, Wendy M, Maureen S, and Penny C. Go ahead, Frida.
Hi, thank you for your service. My name is Freedom H.
Oh, Freedom. Sorry,
Mary.
Freedom.
It's okay. Thank you. I know this to be true with all of my heart and soul. This paragraph is so true. I have been abstinent now for going on 3 weeks, and I'm finding myself wanting to overeat on my good food, on chicken. I want to have more than just one piece of chicken and more than green beans, vegetables. I'm finding myself wanting to overeat, and it's not on sugar, it's not on bread and flour. And I'm realizing that the truth about the matter is it's a spiritual, and it's much deeper than just the sugar and stuff for me. It's much deeper. What it is I basically, the only way I knew unconditional love was food. My mom would feed me a lot growing up, but she didn't give me any kind of emotional stuff, or physical teachings, she gave me conditional love. But in this program, I'm learning that my higher power is unconditional love, and that's what I need, is his unconditional love to feel comforted instead of trying to find it in food. Because there's days when I get stressed and I want to go to food and I want to eat it to feel that love and to feel happy and good for once in my life. But I realize that I have to go to the higher power. It's a delusion. It's a falsehood. It's lying to me, because the food is meant to heal me and keep me strong and healthy and happy, not to destroy me. And it's a false notion. So, yeah, I have to smash this idea that I am not like everybody else. That's for sure. I am not. I have an emotional scar within me that I've been trying to fill. I have some wound in me that needs healing, but the only place I can get that is from God, the higher power. I can't do it on my own, not without the unconditional love of this program, of people that are on here. Hearing it heals me. Just listening to the stories heals me. Because when I tried to talk to anybody else in my life about any of this, they would shut me down and deny it and not even give me a chance to express my feelings. It was like my feelings didn't matter. But guess what? There is a program that I can call into where people are being honest, they're being real, and they're speaking the truth, and they are trying the best they know how to do. So I really appreciate this program. I thank the higher power that I found this program, because I was down for the count. And, yeah, I cannot fool myself. I cannot even think. Oh, thank you. Thank you for letting me share. And with that, I will mute. Thank you.
And thank you, Freedom H. Bruce E., you're up next, followed by Beatrice O.
Yeah, I'm Bruce E. I'm in North Carolina. Thank you, everybody on the line. This is a great page. This paragraph and this page is just a great place in the big book, I think. And I got a guy I'm sponsoring. I asked him to start reading this page every day. I had been reading this page every day. Probably need to go back to reading it every day again. But I asked him to read it every day. And he said, oh, you want me to read that page every day? You know, every day? Yeah, I want you to read that page every day. So, the delusion is that I think I can eat like other people. I think that I can use alcoholic foods, and I think that I can do eat those foods and do an oh yeah. And I see my wife doing that, you know, eating a food and going ooh. But she's not one of us. She's not a compulsive overeater. She's not a food addict. She's normal, and in that respect. And I'm not. So I can't be doing an ooh-ah over even my foods that are on my approved legal list, you know. I just have to put food in a healthy place. You know, it's got to be, I got to have a healthy relationship with food. Now, I had a rough time with this paragraph at first when I got in the program because I didn't want to concede to my innermost self that I was a food addict. I wanted to think that I could do 95% of the program and not the other 5%, and then I kept relapsing doing that. But what is a healthy relationship with food? Well, it's that I eat the foods that are on my list, and you know, I have those, and I don't obsess over them, and I don't do the you and I over it, and then I go on with life, you know? So I'm talking to a lady yesterday from church, and she's having this relationship with this guy that's in prison, and he's about 30, she's 60, and he's covered with tattoos, just got caught with a weapon in prison. And she said when he moves out, she's going to let him move in with her. So I said, that's not a healthy, to me, that's not a healthy relationship. You know, then I'm thinking about, well, how does that relate to food? Well, I have to have a healthy relationship with food. I have to think of food for what it is, not for something that's going to get me high or that I'm going to get all stoked up on or go to the moon with, you know. Or just shoot heroin. You know, I mean, it's got to be normal. Thank you. And I pass.
Thank you, Brucey. Beatrice O., you're up next, followed by Wendy M.
Good morning. This is Beatrice O. from the Bay Area in California. I really like this paragraph because it says I had to concede and, you know, I could concede because concede means in the dictionary is when you come out of denial and you admit something that you've been denying. And I could admit that I was a food addict, compulsive overeater, but what I couldn't do is I couldn't believe that I could not put it down. I thought that I could control it. And the big book says, you know, we lost power, choice, and control. And so when I was controlling my food, I wasn't enjoying it. And when I was enjoying it, I was I was out there. And so I was in that illusion, delusion phase. I mean, I could believe that I was a food addict, but that's as far as it went. So I just want to piggyback where someone said, your heart is where the actions are going to be or where they're going to take place. So first of all, food used to be my lover. And I had to replace food with God. So when I got the substances out of my body, I had to replace that with God. And there's a proverb that says, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. So when we're thinking about when I think in secret, it comes to pass. And, you know, my environment is like a looking glass. And sometimes I have to, you know, well, number one, I have to look inward. And, you know, the third step says I can, he can, and I'll let him. You know, I remember people used to say, I think I'll let him. And I used to say, no, I don't think that anymore. Think is the problem. So if I think that I can, I will. So I don't entertain food anymore. And I don't think that I can eat like a normal person. I know that's not true. I can fool a lot of people, but, you know, when I look in the mirror, I have to
time, please?
I just have to love and accept who I am when I look in the mirror. And part of that is I am not a normal eater. Thank you. And I'll pass.
Thank you, Beatrice O. And Wendy M., you're up next, followed by Maureen S. and Penny C. I don't know if we're going to have time for you. I apologize for that. Go ahead, Wendy.
Yeah. Good morning, Wendy M. in Boulder, Colorado. Grateful to be on the line. Thanks for your service. So conceding to my innermost self requires that I'm honest. And I'm like, you know, I could be partially honest, but not completely honest, right? So, and part of the problem is that my thinking, which is what this chapter is about, right, is about, is that it's in my head, so it sounds right. I can be lying like all day because it sounds right. Like that's how the disease works. And I used to think the disease was in my thighs, but it's actually between my ears. That's where the disease lies. And I love this chapter because it's so depicts the insanity of our thinking right before that first bite, you know. And I have to say, too, that, you know, when I first heard, you know, step one 18 years ago in Los Angeles on a Friday night, I was relieved. I was like, ugh, no wonder. I said, this is a great program. I am not in charge of this addiction. I cannot control. I cannot fix. I cannot alter, you know, as much as I want to try to control, fix, alter, change myself, I can't. And thank God there's a power greater than me that can. I'll give God that job. All I can do is the footwork, right? All I can do is do the steps, you know, do the deal, do 10, 11, and 12. And the other thing I want to say about honesty is that I've been dishonest lately, and I want to just share the insanity of my mind. I was sick the other day with a cold. Somebody says, here, have some, like, energy packet, right? I'm drinking it going, this is sweet. I wonder if there's sugar in it. Guess what? I know there's sugar in it, and I drank it anyways. You know, oh, but it's not, you know, a plate full of brownies. Oh, it's not ice cream. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what form it comes in. You know, this is the whiskey and the milk story that we read, you know, later on. This is my insanity, and I have to pick up the phone, call somebody, and say, I had sugar, whether it was sugar-free or not. You know, my mind, my disease says, ah, you know what, it's medicine. You were just trying to feel better. You were sick. Give me a break, right? I have to fully concede, be completely honest with myself. You know, the other day I had a teeny little sip of beer. It's like, what am I doing? You know, I'm like, I know that I'm a compulsive overeater. Well, beer doesn't really have sugar in it. You know, it doesn't matter. Whiskey in the milk. It doesn't matter. I'm the jaywalker. I will go back and do it again and again and again and again. You know, and I'm going to start step one today with somebody in the program. Thank you, God. Because this is the insanity of my mind. You know, it starts with, I'll give you one more example, the Listerine strip. Put it in my mouth because I didn't want to have bad breath. This is like 2 years ago, right? Knowing full well. And then looking at the ingredients, wondering if there's fake sugar in it. Knowing there's fake sugar in it, right? It's insane. And all I get to do is turn it over to you guys and give it to God. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Wendy M. And Maureen S., you have about 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Sorry
so much.
About that, but go ahead.
Maureen here, grateful to have these 2 minutes. And thank you so much for everyone for being here. This paragraph really speaks to me. When I'm abstinent 10 days, by the grace of God, and I finally got over my fear of having a sponsor, and I'm getting help, and I'm just so grateful. This paragraph really speaks to me because when I first read it, my first instinct is like, oh yeah, I know I'm a compulsive overeater. I totally get that I have that problem. So why am I getting step one, for years and years and never getting abstinent? And I thought, I didn't really fully concede to my innermost self. I conceded to the addict in me. Oh yeah, I'm a compulsive overeater, but I can't stop. I know I'm not normal. I know I'm not like other people, but I can't stop. So I only got it in terms to the addict part of me, not to the innermost part of me. Once in a while, if I have like a food thought these past 10 days, I actually picture myself binging like crazy, like an addict would shoot up. And I actually picture myself shooting up, even though I'm not that's not my drug of choice. heroin, but I picture myself like a heroin addict shooting up, and it's like a slap in my face, and I'm reminded, oh yeah, I am an, you know, I am an addict. So I'm really kind of getting that paragraph just these past 10 days, and I'm fully conceding to my innermost self, not just the addict part of me. So that for me is kind of a big awareness, because I always thought that I accepted it and I just couldn't get abstinent, but I never really did because I was in the food. When I'm eating, I cannot get any recovery, none. I can pick up the big book, I can pick up my OA book, I can read the 12 and 12 book, but if I'm in the food, it does not help me. I don't get the recovery. So I have to remove all my trigger foods, and I'm grateful for today. Thank you all for letting me be here. Thank you.
And thank you, Maureen S. And sorry we had to cut you short, and Penny C, that we didn't get to you. But I want to thank everyone who shared this morning, and special thanks to Team Monday, Sandy W., Teresa S., Leslie M., Carrie S., Robin P., and Ginger C. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So, Carrie S., would you please read A Vision for You?
Yes, thank you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. To see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. With that, I pass.